Depression was tough. That was really tough. That was just before we got married. It was I left the bank in 1926, and from 26 to 29, things got progressively worse. I had, you know, the job was lucky to get any kind of a job, and it was pretty grim then. You worked whatever you could find at, part-time jobs here or any kind of a job. And it wasn't until really 1929 or 30 that I was able to, you know, finally get in. I did a little accounting then too to keep going, and it wasn't until I started with Ben Moss in 1931 that I was able to think about, you know, about getting married. Even then, it wasn't the time. But I was getting on. I was 30 years old when I got married. Things were very, very rough, but you managed to, you know, to get by on what you had, what you were able to. All right, in 1941, when Mark was a year old, Dave, by that time, the firm he was with was closing down. Dave decided he'd go into business for himself. So he and I started Dolgan Brothers Jewelers.
You were doing books for Sam
Kay? I was doing, all that time I was doing books for Sam Kay. And in the meantime, when I left Ben Moss Jewelers, I had begun building up, you know, a bit of an accounting practice. Sam Kay was the first one, actually. I started with him in 1931. Anyway, we carried on this business, and just to see how it would develop. And it was a good business. Dave spent most of his time at the bench. He was a watchmaker. And then we hired a little girl to be in the store as well. So between the bench and the sales, Dave was kept pretty busy. And it was a fairly good business, except that we found that there wasn't enough there to support two families. But we carried on. I used to come in there once a week and look after the books at the store and pay the bills and balance the cash and, you know, arrange, look after the financial end of it. And then we could see that, you know, there's just nice living for one family, not for two.
What about the 50 flat? All I remember about the 50 flat was Helen May was married then. And she married May the 4th, I guess, the day before the flood, yeah, because we went to the wedding, we came back, we were flooded out.
The water, of course, kept getting higher and higher, and we were right in the pink of it. We were only about a block away from the river. We had two pumps going in the basement, keeping the water out, trying to keep the water out. Remember this one night we had a wedding we had to go to, or I believe it was a wedding, family party we had to go that night, and we left the pumps going, and we come back, the pumps quit, and the basement was completely full then.
And we were supposed to go out for lunch, and I'll never forget that I went to get some clothes, and I took the boat, and I went with the boat straight into our front door. Unfortunately, the phone... Oh, and then I went to get something, and then when I looked, the boat had floated away, you know. So fortunately, our phone wasn't disconnected yet. So I was able to contact them, tell them to go ahead and have their lunch or tea party without me, because I couldn't get out of the house. But actually, the big thing about the flood, I remember, is, as I say, now you have an idea how high the water was. Maxine, who was all of 15 or 16 then, was very busy rowing these boats and helping people evacuate. And I remember one time she went away for so long that I was afraid that she drowned. But this guy was trying to find papers to do with the house, and it took him so long. So that's the only thing I remember. And remember, except that we left the flood, and I remember once we had to get out of the house, the woman at the head of the hill was serving coffee and things, you see, for the people that were working for the flood, you know, trying to work. So I thought I'd go up and offer her some help. But that day she was in such a stew because she thought some water was coming into her basement. She was very generous and very kind and very marvelous while she was dry and everybody else was wet. But the moment she thought that she was going to be affected by the flood, there was no talking to her. So then we went out. So we had no choice. So we went out to Sans Souci.
We got into the car. It was the three of you, Mum and I, and Queenie. We had Queenie with us at the time, too, the dog. And we drove out to Sans Souci. After, remember, we were starting out on the highway, and the highway was cut by water. We had to turn around and drive back about 2 miles to take another highway. We finally got to Sans Souci, and Mr. Khalid, the owner there, he said, "What the hell are you doing here?" And he says, "Your reservation is not the end of June." I says, "Yeah, I know the end of June." He said, "We got no place to go. We completely flooded out." He says, "Look, there's all the snow on the ground." He says, "I'm not ready for you. The cottage isn't ready." He says, "Well, we've no place else to go. We have to stay here." And there wasn't too much dry wood around except what was inside the cabin at the time. Anyway, we had enough warm clothes with us. We stayed there for, well, of course, you stayed all the way through then, all through the summer then, because there was no school by the time the mess was cleaned up. School would have been out anyway.
Now, we went out to Sans Souci, and we stayed out there, and I remember going into the water and complaining about the water being kind of cold underneath, and Mr. Khalid says, "Well, no wonder," he says, "there's still ice underneath, and that's why." But, you know, I had boiled a bunch of potatoes and put them in the fridge, and Mrs. Khalid came in, and I was peeing them. They looked kind of black. She felt so sorry for me. She says, "Is that all you have to eat?" She says, "I'll come bring you something." I said, "No, no, no, it just happens to be these places look black." I'll never forget how sorry she felt for me.
And then we stayed there till at least I came back, and the neighbors around organized a working crew, and we cleaned out the basements. We helped each other to clean out the basements, and once the water receded, the big job was getting the muck and get the silt and the junk that was accumulated, along with what the river brought in, but the stuff that was ruined in there, you know, there wasn't even any use of salvaging it. It was just garbage. And we worked for nights and nights and nights with taking turns at various basements. That was a hectic time. In 1953, that Sam Kay, whose job I took at Ben Moss's, had in the meantime outgrown his premises that he had been working on Henry Avenue, and he had moved on to Princess Street into a four-story building, and things were really going pretty good. By that time, I used to come in once a month, look after his books, up to that time. Then when he moved into Ellis Avenue, and he approached me one day, and he said, "Look," he said, "it's once a month," he says, "you can't keep up with this. How would you like to join me on a permanent basis and take over all the office work of it? And whatever you're earning today with all your accounts, including your jewelry business, I will match it." Fair enough. So I decided I'd do that, and then I gave up the jewelry business, and I gave up most of my accounts then, and I went in with Sam Kay in 1953. And the thing grew and grew and grew until such time that CIL noticed the company, and they made him an offer. They sold it quite well, which enabled Sam to retire completely. When they bought the CIL stepped in, they had three of us sign an agreement that we would stay on for 2 years to help them take over. And they want to know now whether would I consider early retirement. I said, "Yes." I jumped at it. Because I had, by that time, since the case sold out to CIL, I already started looking beyond that just to see what I could do when 65 come along. I'd be out anyway. And I picked up a few more accounts in the meantime. And so we made an arrangement. So when I was 63 years old, I retired. All these years, I've never developed actually a hobby as such, something that you could retire on, though you can't really retire on a hobby, that's not enough. But fortunately for me, I've always liked the work I was doing. Certain challenge to put a bunch of figures together and read a story or what, you know, gives you something, gives you facts, and it projects things for you or for whoever you're doing it. And a certain amount of satisfaction, you know, when you're doing with figures and you're matching figures and you're striving to arrive at a certain result, and you get that result, which is a satisfaction in itself. And then apart from that, reading a balance sheet, strange as it may seem to most people, there's something interesting about reading a balance sheet because it tells a story.
I remember being very pleased with myself because I was in charge of selling the school rings and pins the year, 1 year, and I was the only one that balanced. It all came up perfect. My costs and my this, that, I was very pleased with myself that it all balanced out. Good thing I'm pleased with myself, eh? Well, this Sarah Somner and I, it used to belong to a group that was sponsored by the Jewish Musical, Jewish Women's Musical Club. And it was an Israeli dance group. But we were older women. I was really about the oldest. But they're all married women, you see. Now, there was somebody else just as old as I was, I guess. Us two were good. Anyways, this little Sarah was exactly 20 years younger than myself. We paired off, and she was my partner, and she was 20, and I was 40. And as I say, she did a solo at one of our concerts, and I was asked to do a solo. And I did it, and I was very flattered, because it was the first year I joined. There's all these other people, and here I was, the oldest of the group, was asked to do a solo, so I was quite flattered. But what I want to bring out is this, that we danced for a few years together. As I say, she and I were parked together. Anyways, eventually, she continued with it, and eventually I started to feel I was getting too old to dance on the stage. In fact, Auntie Rasha came to watch me, and she says, you dance beautifully, Eva, but remember, you're not a youngster anymore, you know. Because you know how these Israeli dances are, you jump, 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 jump all the time. The tragedy of the story is that girl died of cancer at 39. When I think back that I was 40 and she was 20, her partner, and we, you know, and I did my first solo at 40 and she didn't live to be 40. You know, here I was just starting my life and her life was over. So in other words, I suppose I have lots to be thankful for, but I always think of it.
At 73, I suppose, logically, most people are retired, but I'm not thinking of it in that way. You know, I'm just going ahead because I'm enjoying what I'm doing. And I take care of the hours and the days, and the years will take care of themselves.